Hello and welcome to an episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness taking place in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in. Today, I'm excited to have Anne-Marie Foucault with us, who is the superintendent in St. Michael Albertville. And we're excited to hear about engagement today. She's going to share with us some unique perspectives on how you go about implementing and continuing your engagement, not only with the community, but beyond the community and potentially into the legislative realm. So welcome and thank you for being here, Anne-Marie.
Yes, thanks for having me, Bob. This is very exciting. Hello, everybody. I've been in St. Michael Albertville for 24 years as a teacher. I was a teacher in the metro too, but teacher here, principal at our primary school. I'm a secondary teacher, so it was unique. I'm going to a primary school. I was testing and assessment coordinator and then director of teaching and learning. And now I'm the proud superintendent for finishing my eighth year. One of the things that I'm passionate about is engagement. I've lived in this community for 33 years. I moved here from Michigan. And so I thought I knew the community. When I stepped into the superintendency, I thought I knew everything, but I really truly didn't engage, or I truly didn't understand how important that engagement was. And of course, I was a Rotarian, Chamber of Commerce, but I really didn't concentrate so much on engaging the public. And it really came crashing down and evident a few years back when we had, we've always had funding issues out here in St. Michael Albertville. We are ranked one of the last districts in per pupil revenue in the state of Minnesota, but we've been growing, so it was fine. But the pandemic hit, and we lost a few kids because of the pandemic, but we also, we stopped growing. And our kids didn't really qualify, our community didn't qualify for a lot of the COVID federal funding dollars. So it all came crashing down on us. I remember in March of 2020, I recommended to the board that we cut some money. Over the next couple budget cycles, we ended up cutting $7.3 million and 77 staff. We don't have an operating levy. We're one of the few districts, I think 30% of districts in the state of Minnesota do not have an operating levy. We're one of them. And our community is very conservative. And so passing a levy is very challenging. But I thought, I've lived here, 33 years. I know the people. Our people in our community are fantastic. I'm one of them. We support education in our schools. So I didn't think it would be a big deal. I did 77 different presentations that first year. We went out in November of 2021 with a modest amount. We had a steering team. We did. We had city leaders. We had community members, students. We had all kinds of people on this team, and we went out for a modest amount. And the tax impact was a lot, though. And remember, it was November 2021. We were just out of the pandemic. There was a lot of uncertainty, inflation, and so it failed miserably. And I couldn't believe it. And we went out again. There was a lot in between there, but to get to the engagement, I'll cut to the chase. And so we went out again. I pulled the team together, another steering team, and the steering team had students. We had parents. We had people from our union, city leaders, community leaders, thought leaders. We had so many people on that. And of course, we had a yes group too. There was that. And we cut the amount in half, or almost in half, and it again failed miserably. And so really made us step back and pause and evaluate why. Like, why did that happen? And really it came down to, I think, a matter of trust. And I made the mistake of thinking we had trust, but I wasn't cultivating that trust. I wasn't nurturing that trust and that engagement. But I really took a couple of months or 3 months and looked at where are the holes. And the whole purpose was this. I wanted to tell our story. I wanted to engage the public and the community because I felt certain that if they could hear our story, they would think differently. And of course, social media didn't help. We don't have a communication person. That's me. The community was telling our story for us, and that was a problem. So like I said, I sat down, spent some time, really reflected, talked to a lot of community members, a lot of senior citizens that have been in the community a long time, our mayors of both St. Michael and Albertville, our city administrators, our school board, students. I talk to our students. I have superintendent student forums, actually have 24 of them a year. In the end, I created and resurrected 19 different engagement groups. And we are a team, just like most districts, you know, you have your team. And so I made sure that we looked at who's facilitating these groups and what segment of the population in the community do we need to target so that we were getting all of those different groups. And so when I did this, I also tied it to our strategic plan. Everything that I say and do is connected to that strategic plan.
So you're going down a path and saving me a lot of questions. You're flowing right into what some questions I was going to ask. But two things that come to mind are, one, how did you choose who facilitated each of those meetings? And was there a process, or was it important to figure out a sequencing of those meetings?
Yep, good question. I didn't look at the person facilitating it first. I looked at the need. So after talking to all of those stakeholders, I went back to even with our students don't know about our engagement. You know, I meet with kindergartners, but I took the themes from those student groups and what I was meeting with all those other stakeholders, and I decided which ones we needed to have. Took it to our cabinet, took it to our administrative team. You know, this is what I'm thinking. And we met in small groups. We talked about it. We changed some things. And in the end, like I said, we came up with 19 different ones. And then we looked at who should be leading these and facilitating these conversations. And so, like, for example, the activities, we have an activities advisory team. And so, of course, that one made sense to have our activities director lead that one. We have a superintendent engagement advisory team. And of course, that makes sense for me to lead that. We had a finance advisory team, and our finance director leads that one. But a lot of these are more of a team-based approach. So like our policy review committee is a good example. So we have our HR director, our director of administrative services. So he facilitates that team, but he also has a principal, an elementary rep, and then he has a secondary principal rep. He has union reps from our different unions, our principals union, certified staff, support staff, and then they rotate on and off. He has teacher reps. He has all kinds of different people on there. He has parents. And the one thing that dug my heels in is that I wanted all 19, to be representative of the community or the building. So we have 8 different parent advisory councils. These are not PTOs. We used to have the GLORP when we love our PTOs. We used to have our PTOs. That was our advisory committee. But this was a shift, and we really talked about, do we really want our PTOs? Because the PTOs are, you know, their own separate entity and the principals attend. We've talked about having a parent advisory council where the principal is facilitating the conversation. And then also I wanted principals to look at, and all of them to look at, if it's the policy review committee, then look at the demographics of the community and invite staff members and community members that represent our demographics of our community, and same with our buildings. And so that we were getting really not just the rubber stampers in, because we don't want just someone that's going to come in and say, that's great, you're doing a great job, you know, we love you. We wanted people to come in and ask us those hard questions. And even with the superintendent engagement and advisory team, I was very purposeful in choosing, inviting our naysayers. So I know who the people were, like during the 2 levies that failed, that were saying we don't deserve the money, our kids didn't need it, we were hiding it in suitcases, you know, all of these funny things that we know are not true. Well, I personally reached out to them and asked them to be on our team.
So along the way, given all of those different teams, those facilitators and your district leaders, was there any part of this, or how did you go about developing your leaders in order to navigate the conversations, facilitate what you needed? Was there kind of a preparation period of time or an ongoing piece that went along with this?
We wanted them to be consistent. We wanted them to be regular. We wanted them to be somewhat consistent, but at the same time, they're different, right? So like parent advisory committees meet during the school year. They meet once a trimester. So I developed an action card and, you know, spelled it out. So everyone was crystal clear on what the rules were, you know, what were the expectations. So they were all marching together. And so each building knew for the parent advisory committees anyways, you know, not to have it, you know, once a week. So I did those. And then but I also wanted to not have so many rules and so many like limitations, because every committee is a little bit different. Like policy review committee is very different than our special education advisory council. So I wanted to make sure that the leader, once we chose the leader, we had the names, that was first, or the themes, and then we chose the facilitators and who was going to be on those teams. Then we talked about a charge. You know, what's the purpose? What's the focus? And so I gave each of the facilitators an action card and had them complete it. You know, what was their vision? I wanted to have their voice. We're very, you know, voice is important to me in that collaborative spirit. And so they completed that. And then we talked about it, you know, as an administrative group, you know, what did you think? Like, here's what I'm going to do for this team. Here's what I'm going to do. And so that they weren't all over the place, but yet, so they were tight, but yet there was a lot of leeway to bring their professional flair and their own creativity and what their needs were for that particular team.
So Anne-Marie, when we first talked about doing this, we talked about not only the internal engagement processes and systems that you had set up, but you also talked about external engagement that you spent a lot of time on. And so I'm wondering if you could help our listeners understand what that looked like.
I'd like to talk about one of them, the legislative action team that I think we're very proud of. And I think it's a good example of how this all worked.
And I've been anxious for you to get into the legislative action team, because I know in talking with you that that's a team that really has gone above and beyond, I would say probably almost every other district that I'm aware of, in terms of their outreach, even being visible at the Capitol and what they do and how they contact our leaders at the state level.
Yes. So we're very excited about this. So even when I started 8 years ago, we had, you know, we dabbled as a district in legislative advocacy. So when I first started, I was told, you have to lead this legislative advocacy team. I knew nothing about legislation. Well, very little, you know, and so I decided, you know, I was going to resurrect this group, and I had a meeting and nobody came. And so I thought, well, you know, first year superintendent, I have lots of things to do. So I didn't worry too much about it. Second year, third year, fourth year, same thing. You know, we were getting by. We had plenty of different things that we were working on as a district. But like the budget, that's why I started off with our budget issues. So when the pandemic hit and we had to cut the $7.3 million to failed levies, you know, people were asking me, what are we going to do, Amory? What are we going to do? We need to do something. And so it was a perfect opportunity to resurrect the legislative action team at Ignite. The passion. We had extremely large class sizes. They were approaching 50 at the high school. We had 30 in kindergarten. I mean, we had 38 to 42 in fourth grade. And it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. There were tears. I felt like I was just walking around with Kleenexes all the time. I'd be approaching the grocery store. People would be crying. And I thought to myself, you know, we can dwell on this misery and just keep having things done to us, or we can make lemonade and we can take action. And so we had a group of people, and I, again, took full advantage of the fact that people wanted to do something, and they were mad. There was anger. There was sadness. There were all these feelings. And what I wanted to do was harness that passion and that energy and put it into something positive that we could actually do something with. And hence going back to why I like to call them action teams, because people want to take action. They don't want to send a committee. So I resurrected the legislative action team and I advertised the heck out of it. We put it all over social media and we got a core group of parents and staff members, support staff, teachers, principals, we had a couple students, or we have a couple students too. We even had grandparents because, like I said, I wanted to make sure that we represented the community. And so we had senior citizens, business leaders, mayors, we had it all. And so we took some time. We didn't just jump in and say, okay, let's start writing letters to the House and Senate. What we did was we talked about, I had a charge, you know, what is our charge? And our charge was to advocate locally at the Capitol during the session. But then also, and this is important, I think it's important, before we could do any of that, we had to educate and engage stakeholders within our own community, because we can send all the letters we want. You know, we're a group of 10 people, but we needed to get everybody else behind us in our community. And our voices are loud and they might not be able to serve on the legislative action team, but they still want what's best for kids and to support our schools. So we really, that was the charge. And then we came up with norms. And then I had them help. You know, I said that this is our charge, but what do you think? Because I didn't want it to be just my committee. I wanted it, or a district committee, even though it is a district committee, it's the board approves it every year in January and has board representation on the team. Actually, they have it on all 19. A board member is assigned to every one of them because they're an important part. And then they come back, they attend the meetings, and they come back and report to the board. So what they came up with were three bullet points, because I said, we should have like an elevator speech. What would you tell somebody if they want to join the legislative action team? So to advocate locally and at the Capitol. Building relationships with those legislators, because it's not a one and done. It takes a long time to build those relationships with legislators and other state leaders. And then to educate and engage stakeholders in the political process. And then, of course, to align our actions and activities with the district and the school board. Again, when you think of that strategic plan, we're all marching in the same direction. We can't have a legislative action team going this way and not in alignment with the legislative priorities of our school board. Then we created a steering team, and then the steering team leads some of the action teams. So initially we had like a network outreach team. We had a local, like a Capitol presence team, a communication team, and it sounded really good on paper, but to be honest, once we sat down, I think eventually we'll have those, but the steering team is really the group that decides what we're going to do. And what we decided that first year was to engage and educate the community. And so we had a group of people on that steering team that embraced this fully. They were fantastic. They developed their own, they taught themselves a little bit about school finance, and they made a presentation. And then we came up with a list of all the places that we needed to go: Rotary, the parent advisory, the assisted living places, all kinds of places, chamber. And so they went to a number of places and educated the public on why are we one of the lowest funded schools? Why do we need money? Why did the district ask for money the last couple of years? And it worked out really well because they were out there spreading the word, and then they were telling their neighbors, and they were building that coalition, and it got larger and larger, so large that the steering team had to have a general membership team. So people can, stakeholders can just sign up. There's on our website, there's a QR code that I'll put in our community newsletter once in a while, and they can sign up. So then they get, because we'll send a call to action out frequently. Then the next year we decided we should do Legislative Advocacy 101. So imagine a group of parents, very passionate parents, a student, grandmas, and we decided that we were going to host it. And so we came up with a number of different basics. One, for example, was Legislative Advocacy Basics. You know, how does the legislative process work? Because you know, you take it in high school, but you probably don't know, you know, how to form a legislative action team, communicating with legislators, things like that. And we hosted on a Saturday. We invited some professional organizations like MSBA or Schools for Equity in Education. And we had, our media center was full. Now, fast forward a couple, 3 years, we have so many people that are calling, visiting, emailing legislators, and even our own leaders in the House and the Senate. One called and had asked me to come for coffee, and we spent 3.5 hours discussing STMA and what they could do to help us.
That is so cool and such a great process. For someone who's coming into a district new, whether they're a seasoned superintendent or a new superintendent, what would you say is the difference between being out and visible as a superintendent and overtly cultivating engagement?
Excellent question, because I thought I was doing it. I mean, literally, I go to something almost every night. So I thought, you know, I was talking to parents, I was talking to staff members at these events. But the thing is that they were the people that I'd already had on our, like, I hate to say sides, but they were already big supporters of the district. It was those people that didn't have the opportunity, they weren't maybe coming to the football games or weren't coming to the one-act plays or coming to the second grade choir concerts. And so I had to be very focused and hone in on just those groups. I put myself out there and I attended like the moms clubs. I inserted myself into these areas. And at times, I have to be honest, it wasn't comfortable because, you know, walking into a group of people that weren't supporters, you know, groups that are supporters, but maybe not supporters of spending more tax dollars. And then the other thing I would suggest to new superintendents or even seasoned superintendents that are coming into the job is to get people in. You know, find out who your movers and shakers are. You know, ask your school board members, ask your seasoned staff, ask the city administrators and the mayors, you know, who are the thought leaders in the community. I went to their homes. I don't know how many homes I visited, and just had a conversation. And that's really what it took. My advice is put yourself out there, you know, insert yourself in the conversation at different places in the community that aren't school-based. Go to places and have those hard conversations, because once you tell your story, they're going to tell it to somebody else, and they're going to tell then somebody else, and you're just widening the group of people that know all the amazing things that your staff and your, you know, they're doing for kids, the good things. So, and the other thing I should add, this is, I did this the past year, and at first I thought this might be a bad idea, but I did it anyways. I had all of our, you know, our principals do things at night all the time. So they have concerts, sporting events, they have all kinds of obligations. Our directors don't have as many obligations in the evening. And so I asked them to find a someplace in the community, a civic group, something that they could join. Because I do it all the time, but I'm one person, and I wanted to magnify that, make that ripple effect even bigger. And I wanted more people telling our, like, all the great stories about us that our staff are doing. And so, for example, our director of buildings and grounds, there's a group of senior citizens. They meet at McDonald's on Thursdays. He chose that as his group. Our director of special services, she joined the Friends of the Library organization. One of our directors chose to go to, one is going to chamber. So we have 11 different directors that are out there that are building relationships, nurturing relationships, making those connections. And then they're telling our story. And that is what's really helped as a district.
Yeah. And I think one of my biggest takeaways just listening to you talk about this is this idea that, you know, impacting one person, that whole idea of one person has the potential to impact seven other people with the story. And paralleling that, this idea of we have to find ways, whether they're unique ways or not so unique, but we have to find ways to control our narrative and tell our narrative before other people do it, or create in the absence of narrative something that is not necessarily the truth about what's going on in the district.
Absolutely. And that's what this was about, because it's hard to build trust when community members, when stakeholders are hearing a story and that's not us, and it really does hurt our kids. And that's what it goes back to. And I'll leave you with this. Our number one core value is we put kids first, or we put students first. And everything that I've talked about, everything we do, that is about putting kids first. And we just had to reinvent how we put kids first. And instead of being in kind of the traditional model is be in the school district, go to events. And it's so much bigger than that. It's the community. It's important.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be a part of this today.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate the opportunity.
Again, we've been talking with Anne-Marie Foucault, the superintendent for St. Michael Albertville Schools here in Minnesota. I'm Bob McDowell, your host, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.